former coordinator of the National University of Guatemala's Truth Commission. From his own personal experiences as a human rights activist, Dr. Molina will give us a thorough and in-depth look at Guatemalan politics, talk about the influence the United States plays in internal affairs, and address some of the issues faced by Guatemalans who migrated here to escape political repression, among many other issues. Without further ado, I think I'll just introduce the guest, Dr. Raul Molina. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you very much for coming, and I want to especially thank Duane for inviting me to be here. I think it is always a good opportunity to talk about Guatemala. We know that Guatemala is not so much in the news lately, and many people are asking themselves, well, what's going on? We heard a lot of Guatemala in the past years, basically because we were suffering repression from the state for many, many years. And you also knew that we were engaged in a peace-seeking process during 6 or 7 years, till finally the insurgency in Guatemala, led by the URNG, and the government of Guatemala signed the peace accords on December 29th, 1996. Basically, that's when the story ends, so that most people believe that once the accords are signed, everything is fine. And unfortunately, case after case, we see that peace accords should be seen, or the signature of the peace accords should be seen only as a new beginning, but a new beginning with a lot of challenges and with a lot of problems. For instance, in the case of Guatemala, I was very proud to be at the National Palace in Guatemala on the night of December 29th, 1996, and be a witness to the signature of the accords. I was among the, I would say, 500 people who were inside the palace, and we were watching this historic event. And after that, we came out to the National Plaza, the Plaza of the Constitution, as it is called, and we saw thousands and thousands of Guatemalans cheering up, congratulating each other because peace had come to the country. It was a moment of optimism. It was a moment when we thought, well, we have a new opportunity. And at the beginning, we must say that the peace accords were implemented very well. We had established a chronogram or timetable of 4 years in order to implement all the provisions of the peace accords. And we had like three phases, three stages for the implementation. The first stage of 3 months, then 9 months in order to complete the first year, and then 3 years in order to complete the entire timetable. So the first 3 months were wonderful. All the things that were organized for that period were really complied with. The URNG, the insurgent movement, disarmed itself, and combatants came back to the country and they joined society. They were admitted in society, and a political party started with people who had left or who have finished the confrontation with the state. But then there was a 9-month period when things started to look a little bit different, so that no longer the accords were seen as the main issue for Guatemala, but the government then started to believe that the neoliberal model should be introduced, that the government had to be reduced, that the state could not comply with social provisions and so on, and little by little there was a divorce between the peace accords and the agenda of the government. As a result of this, when we came to the end of the timetable, at the end of the first 4 years, we found out that out of the entire set of provisions for the peace accords, only 40% had been complied with. So there was certainly a big frustration in the population, because the population couldn't see the results that they were expecting. And some of those results were results on the social and economic field, so that people expected some benefit coming out of the Peace Accords, and not just laws and certain transformations and certain things that did not change the conditions of life. In terms of human rights, which is a very important variable for all of you, we must say that there was a very significant achievement in that period of time, and that is the state stopped persecuting people. So the right to life came to be respected in terms of actions by the state. As you probably remember, in Guatemala between 1960 and 1996, the state was the main responsible for the death of more than 200,000 people. And that's a huge number of Guatemalans who were killed in a population that perhaps today is like 12 or 13 million people, so that you can imagine the significance of that impact on Guatemala. We had the highest number of disappearances in the American continent. Many people speak of Argentina as the place of the disappearances, and certainly they had 30,000, and that's a huge number. But we have more than 45,000 disappearances. And we haven't found those people. But there's no data, there is no information. They vanish in the air after they were taken from homes, jobs, the schools, university, on the streets, and so on. So the impact of repression was tremendous in Guatemala, and that's something that we have to appreciate now, that the state is no longer responsible for persecuting people. It doesn't mean that the right to life as such is respected. That we must be very clear, because there are consequences of that attack on a society, and those consequences tend to be criminality, violence, secret groups that continue to act, secret groups that start illicit businesses, and criminal actions. And that's very hard to stop. So that although we were very happy that things improved, in general, human rights did not improve as much as people were expecting. Because we are talking not only when we speak of rights, we are not speaking only of civil and political rights, or only the right to life. That's extremely important and that's key. But we also demand respect of economic, social, and cultural rights. And in the case of Guatemala particularly, where we have that 70% of the population is indigenous, well, we are also claiming for respect for indigenous rights, respect for the languages, no discrimination, respect for the culture, and so on. And this is not happening in the way that was expected. As a matter of fact, there was a recent Congress on racism and discrimination in Guatemala, and the conclusion is that nothing has really changed. That Guatemala continues to be a sort of a country where an apartheid, a de facto apartheid exists. You have the Ladino or white population on one side, and then you have the indigenous population on the other side, and there is a huge difference between enjoyment of rights by the two groups. And we must do a lot in order to change these conditions. So that 8 years after the signature of the Peace Accords, and we will be reaching the 8th year, December 2004, we are still halfway in the compliance of the provisions of the Peace Accords. It means there is still much to do. And we have, on the other hand, the fact that the United Nations, which has been accompanying this process for these 8 years, is ending its presence in Guatemala at the end of this year. So that beginning 2005, we still have to comply with 50% of the provisions, and we no longer have the United Nations with us in order to verify that this happens. So things are continue to happen in Guatemala that are extremely concerning. And as a matter of fact, a couple of days ago, we have again a terrible event in Guatemala. One of the key problems in Guatemala for years, ever since Guatemala was invaded by the Spaniards in 1524, is land. Land is fundamental for Indians, for indigenous peoples, not only for producing. Of course, they need to produce basically corn and beans and so on, but land is also a fundamental aspect of the cosmovision of the Mayan civilization. For them, the land is the mother of life for most of them. So that taking away land from this population is practically attacking the civilization as such, not only attacking the means of production. So land has always been a problem in Guatemala. As a matter of fact, there was a limited period in Guatemala when there was a government who decided to go and establish a land reform there, and that was the only democratic period of Guatemala, and it was very good, but then everything returned to the previous conditions. So land continues to be a problem, and land is considered in the Peace Accords. In the Peace Accords, there is a provision that all land that is not being used should be bought by the state in order to be given to the campesinos, to the peasants, because land should be in the hands of those who want to work the land. There is no reason to have unused land all over the place. So that the government was supposed to be buying those pieces of land and giving those pieces of land to campesinos, selling those pieces of land. It is not just a gift. Campesinos will pay for them, but they will, of course, have certain conditions that would allow them to really pay once they are producing. The problem is that those people who own the land, that very tiny percentage of the population in Guatemala who own the land, have found that this is going to be a huge business. So the government wants to buy the land, okay, then the land will be 10 times worth what it was before the signature of the Peace Accords, because they want to make a huge business, a huge deal with that. So it has been difficult to get land. And at the meantime, you have a campesino population starving and trying to find a way of surviving. So there have been occupations of land by campesinos. And this is a problem that has, for the past 4 years, has been a very significant problem in the country, with no solution by the state, with no solution by the government. So that we had this event a couple of days ago, where campesinos had occupied a farm that was the property of a Spaniard who lives in Guatemala. And then this Spaniard went to the court, and the judge ordered the evacuation of this land, to take these people out of the land. And so that the judge ordered the police to go and take them away. But they did it in a very, very brutal way. And I want to read for you what happened that day, 2 days ago. A clash between police officers and armed campesinos occupying the Nueva Linda plantation in Champerico, Retaluleu, left 9 dead and many questions unanswered as investigations begin. Midday on August 31st, 800 police officers descended on a group of farming families that had been occupying the land since last September in protest of the disappearance of campesino leader Héctor René Reyes. So they were not even occupying that land because they wanted to take over the land. They were occupying the land because a person, a leader of them, had been disappeared, and had been disappeared by bodyguards of the owner of this farm. So at least 3 police officers were killed in the confrontation, and at least 6 campesinos were shot dead, including 2 minors. 24 individuals suffered injuries, at least 25 campesinos are still missing, and the concern is that they may again be among disappearances because nobody knows where they are. Journalists who were beaten and threatened by police during the 40-minute skirmish allege that 3 of the 6 campesinos were executed extrajudicially. So they were plainly shot there. And campesino leaders report that their missing family members may be buried in a clandestine mass grave. So this is the same horror and terror that the population lived through for the years of the confrontation, of the civil war there. And it is coming again from the police ranks. There was a case of a woman who is captured right now, and she saw her son being killed in front of her by the police. But not only that, she was carrying a baby in her arms, and that baby was taken away while she was being beaten, and the baby hasn't reappeared yet, so that they don't know what's going on there. So this is happening 8 years after the peace accords were signed. And the question that we may ask is, well, what then the accords mean? What is the future of a country if the accords were duly signed and now 8 years afterwards there is nothing actually being done in terms of attending these rights for the population? We are certainly concerned, and many people in Guatemala, those that have been defending human rights, are on the streets and are asking everyone to join hands in order to confront this new wave of repression. Those land conflicts should be resolved by negotiations, dialogue, discussions, never by brutal force as it happened. So we have a government which is a new government in Guatemala, which is only 9 months old, and this government is right now making this terrible mistake of using force when it should be using a dialogue, basically. And we are afraid because the government is responding to the interests of the very rich in Guatemala, that this may be the case for the next 3 years, so that we would be again going in the direction of confrontation, and a confrontation in which state and the very rich have the upper hand, certainly the upper hand, and many people may be suffering from this situation. Conditions in Guatemala in social and economic terms, as I said before, are very, very bad. And there is a responsibility of the rich countries in this situation, because this is not a situation only for Guatemala. If you go to Honduras, El Salvador, Dominican Republic, or Colombia, or many other countries, you are going to find the same situation, that the majority of the population is suffering real starvation, that they are in terrible conditions, they are very poor, they are marginalized. Why? Because all these neoliberal policies that have been implemented for the last 10, 15 years certainly have made a few people extremely rich and very well off, but the majority of the population is in terrible condition. And that is one of the fundamental reasons for the migration that you have in the United States coming from the South. You know very well, and living in LA, you are right in the place where a lot of people are coming in through the borders, and they are coming illegally. Of course they cross the borders without having the papers or any visa or anything like that, because they need to survive. And not only that, they need their families to survive back home. In Guatemala today, the remittances of the 1.5 million Guatemalans who are already working in the United States, the remittances produce more dollars for Guatemala than coffee, cardamom, and all the other exports combined. So Guatemala is living out of the remittances. But it's not just Guatemala. The same is in El Salvador, the same is Honduras, the same is the Dominican Republic, and many other places. So this migration has become the only way of having certain economies still working in our countries. So that at the moment those borders are closed, or even worse, at the moment those people are deported, we are causing a tremendous damage, not only to the individuals who suffer that, but to the families back, to the communities back, and in a way to the country as such. I led the delegations of Guatemalans who are living in the United States. I am one of the few, or probably we are like 20% of Guatemalans in the States have resolved our situation in terms of legal status here, so that we can travel outside and come back without any problems. I'm a resident of the United States. But we have 80% of that 1.5 million who are not. They cannot leave this country because then again they would have to go through the entire process of paying a coyote somewhere and going through the borders and suffering persecution and finally coming here and living like a citizen of fifth category because they cannot even claim the minimum of rights here. So in terms of human rights, we can say that those more than 1 million Guatemalans are being denied the rights also in the United States because of the conditions they are living under. So we took a delegation of Guatemalans to the country in order to ask the President of Guatemala to send a letter to President Bush here demanding a stop, a halt to deportations. And we asked the President of Guatemala, what would you do if 50,000 Guatemalans are deported in a month? And he admitted the entire state will collapse. It's impossible to have 50,000 unemployed with no resources, with debts, and so on, going back there. So he promised to us that he will be in touch with President Bush in order to demand this halt to deportations. And he could do that because President Berger, who is the new president of Guatemala, came to Washington in May, and he had a conversation with President Bush. And he asked for tolerance towards Guatemalans living in the States. And he was told by President Bush, oh, you shouldn't worry at all. Guatemalans will not be deported. They will not be deported unless they commit crimes. Well, that's one of the promises that haven't been fulfilled. Guatemalans are being ejected from the States at a tremendous rate in these days. So we need this action to take place. But we need also other actions. In that sense, we are not alone. We should be joining forces with people from all other Latin American countries, but also from Asian countries, from African countries, people reaching the United States because they feel that this is the place where they could fulfill certain dream of improving conditions. We need to join forces and ask you, US citizens, to help us to improve the migration laws of this country. We certainly need them to be changed. At this moment, those laws are in place with the main purpose of preventing the incoming of poor migrants. Even though those poor migrants come to do a lot of jobs that people here do not want to do or no longer need to do. And so that it is a labor that is needed. That's why we are all here, because we are needed here. But the laws are such that those people come in such terrible conditions that they cannot expect to have a minimum wage. Of course not. They are paid as low as possible because they have no rights. They don't have health benefits. They don't have any sort of benefits. And they end being helped basically by churches and by certain groups and so on. But there is no real reception or welcoming of this migratory flow from the south. We have been told that it is quite different if you are a millionaire. If you come with $1 million, you have your residence right in 24 hours, and then everything is solved. perhaps this is an exaggeration, but we know that certainly this country is very open to rich people and not too open to poor South American or Latin American people. So we are going to work very hard with other colleagues, with other friends, in this area of trying to change, We don't know if we are going to succeed, trying to change the laws for immigration into the United States. But in that effort, your participation will be fundamental. It is, there is no way just migrants would be able to make those changes. We would like to also mention that we are working in a way with the Guatemalans. We are trying to organize Guatemalans here, not only in order to support these efforts to become accepted or welcome in this country, but also to help Guatemalans in a better way. We know that Guatemalans here are already helping Guatemala by sending those amounts of money every month to the relatives. They are really helping a lot of people there. You can do some construction work back home. You can hire some people back home with that money that goes there. You can buy food and then help the producers of food and so on. So it is really helping the economy and really helping society. They are already doing that. But we also believe that we should start working on social programs in Guatemala. We lack education, we lack health, we lack all those conditions that are necessary to improve if we want society to really move forward. So we are going to try to organize these Guatemalans here, and we are trying also to produce some awareness among them about the conditions back home, about the history, why we are here. We are here not because, I would say, most of the people who come here, they would prefer to stay home. They would prefer to have jobs there, to have ways of producing there, and be able to develop the country. If we are here, it's because those conditions do not exist back there, and some money is needed in order to survive. So that we understand that, and we are not trying to tell people, do not come. At this stage, we cannot tell them, do not come, even if they have to face such tremendous conditions or difficult conditions during the movement upward. But we are telling them, you should prepare yourselves for the future of going back to Guatemala and staying back in Guatemala and develop Guatemala. And for that, we are also going to continue to need your help. During the long period of war in Guatemala, the internal armed conflict, during the period of negotiations, we were able to get a good deal of solidarity from you, from people in the United States. That solidarity was very important. And we are not talking mainly in terms of economic matters, although the support in economic matters was also important, but it was the moral support. It was caring for that little country back there that needed support, that needed people with a good heart to be there and speak for us and support us so that we could achieve those peace accords that we were looking for. That solidarity will certainly be needed in the future. We need you to continue having in your hearts that Guatemala, having in your minds that situation, that the peace accords were a significant step forward, but it is just the beginning, and we haven't moved after that in the way we wanted to move. So that we will be telling you through our little organizations in the United States all the things in which you could support us. We are having a meeting in this in LA, a meeting of a network that we have built of Guatemalans and friends of Guatemala. It is called Guatemala Peace and Development Network, so that the two key issues for the network is peace in Guatemala and development of Guatemalans, both in Guatemala and outside Guatemala abroad. So this network, it was an idea that we approved 3 years ago at the beginning of September 2001 in here in Orange County, as a matter of fact, in Lucia's house. We met for 3 days and we decided to build this network. And now we have this network not only in the United States, Mexico, and Canada, which was originally our idea, but we have also friends in Austria, Spain, other parts of Europe, and South America, also joining the network and trying to put together our efforts so that we can do more for Guatemala and more for Guatemalans wherever they are. So we are working on this. You have a copy of our brochure with our mission, our vision, our goals, and our main activities that we are doing. And we have been advancing. It is not easy since we all have our own normal work. This is an extra work that we are providing in order to improve conditions. So we want you to know about the network. There are people in LA who are part of the network and who maybe eventually come and talk to you and tell you about the things that we are doing, tell you about these efforts in terms of migration laws, efforts in terms of connecting societies here or communities here with communities in Guatemala, and so on. We went in Guatemala in this visit that we recently paid to the country. We went to a very small village with indigenous people, all of them in that village, Cajola in Quetzaltenango, Guatemala, are indigenous. And we went there because in Morristown, New Jersey, there is a group of 114 youngsters from that town in Guatemala. And they are between 14 and 23 years old. This is the youth of Guatemala, which is leaving the country in order to work somewhere else. But that means we are draining our youth in our country. We went to the village and we talked to the fathers and mothers of these kids. They were extremely happy to have us there because they felt that we were linking directly their kids with the families. But we also met with young wives of those people who are away. And I saw a very young Indian woman there, indigenous woman, with a child, 7 years old. And I asked, well, where is your husband? Oh, my husband is one of the people in Morristown, New Jersey. How long ago you saw your husband? 7 years. So it is a new reality that is hitting our country. Those are families totally separated. And if they cannot arrange their papers here, well, there's no possibility for the wife and children to travel and meet them. And they cannot travel back because then they would have to start again the whole process of coming back to the States. So that this is very important for us to live, because we see there the reality. We don't see too many young men in that town. We see a lot of young women and women. So it is changing the demography of the country. It is producing a significant change. And as we told Congress in Guatemala and the President in Guatemala, this is a situation of the 21st century. We never imagined that 15% of the Guatemalan population will be working in the United States. It was inconceivable, that there was no idea that this was going to happen. And we have to think and give responses to that new situation. For instance, we are asking Congress in Guatemala to pass a law allowing us Guatemalans abroad to vote. We cannot vote. I know you can vote from outside the United States. It has been a right for many years for you. For us, it doesn't exist. If we are here, we don't count. We don't decide on who is going to be the president there or who is going to be in Congress there and so on. And we are asking also for representatives of these communities abroad in Guatemalan Congress. Why? Because this is the only way of making that Congress think about people who are abroad. Because if they, it is very easy to forget. It is so good to receive the money from the United States, but not to think of what's happening to people in the United States. So that we will be having also this struggle in Guatemala, the struggle for political rights of people living abroad. We are advancing. We may have good news soon, and certainly our friends here in LA will be telling you to celebrate with us if those rights are achieved very soon. But this is a long-term struggle, and eventually, if we organize well and we have people very, very much aware of the rights here and there, we will be able to contribute much better to the U.S. society. Those people who are here will eventually be participating, supporting, making things continue to prosper, continue to develop in this country. We know the situation in this country is at this moment difficult. We have seen both in the social and economic arena, but also in the political arena. We are concerned about the future, because for the first time in many, many years, human rights are in jeopardy here. Civil rights, the right to express, expression, to free expression, the right to organize may be also in jeopardy. And basically, we were terrified when we heard that some people were defending here that torture was a way that you could use, as an instrument, a tool you could use in order to defend this country. I think using torture would be a way of sinking this country. And we believe that we all should oppose that. And by bringing so many people who have suffered directly torture and many violations of human rights in our countries, we have real witnesses of why this shouldn't happen. And I think this is a struggle in which we can support you in order to prevent going backwards. We should, as a civilization, go forward and have human rights at the center of all policies. And certainly, this is something that is in the debate right now, and we would like you to overcome the dangers for human rights in the United States. So this is a brief message, and certainly you may probably have some questions. I would like to respond to them. I don't want to overextend myself, but certainly if you have some comments or questions, I'll be more than willing to continue with this. Thank you.
Anybody have any questions?
What type of aid does the United States give to Guatemala?
Well, at this moment, we have significant aid in terms of economic programs, basically. And there was a support also for the implementation of the peace accords. Not as much as people were expecting. I would say that the main contributor to the peace accords in Guatemala is the European Union, more than the United States. But still, the United States used all the funds that had been provided for many years in order to push forward some of the programs of the peace that the peace accords were demanding. Thank goodness, many years ago, we obtained from Congress in the United States to stop military aid, so that there is no military aid at this moment. Although the new government is asking for the renewal of this aid. We believe that the best for Guatemala would be the elimination of the army. I think the army has nothing to do but just produce expenses for the Guatemalan nation. We don't have fear of any attack or invasion by any other country, so there's no reason to have an army. But it is very difficult to obtain that. Costa Rica did it many years ago, and Costa Rica has developed much more than Guatemala in social terms. But we, in the future, expect that. But if there is military aid from the United States, if this demand is responded positively by the administration of the United States, then we will see the strengthening again of the military, and with that, the risk of going back to a situation we don't want to live anymore. Persons that they could speak on their own languages, because we have this problem with the Guatemalan population coming to the States. Many of them do not speak Spanish. So they speak their own language, which may be Mam, Quiche, Quechi, Cachiquel, Sutuhil, and so on. And then they start learning English. So they jump from their own native language into English here, but they are not familiar with Spanish. So that having a station, speaking to them in their own language is going to be very good. As a matter of fact, we have an idea, and eventually we may approach you to see if we can have some support. Most of these young kids who are coming to work here did not learn any history of Guatemala back home. First, the schools never told them what happened, what was the civil conflict or the internal armed conflict, what were the peace accords, what is to be implemented. They know nothing about that. And it is not their fault. In the school they were not told, and their families did speak very little about this because of fear. In Guatemala, to mention openly the internal armed conflict was very dangerous for a lot of families and for a lot of communities. So they do not know about that. So we believe that we should start here, where there is more freedom in order to read and learn about these things, to start the particular seminars or workshops with these indigenous peoples from the different ethnic communities, and tell them about the history, the recuperation of the historic memory of Guatemala with them. And so they could go back to their communities here and in their own languages tell them about this and have a multiplication effort. So we are trying to organize a first workshop in one city of the United States. We don't know yet where, but probably it makes sense to do it in LA. And probably by the end of the year, and bring these Guatemalans who are everywhere in the United States, from the Northeast to Florida to California to Seattle and so on, and have this sort of activity, because we need them, we need to talk to them in their own languages by teaching some people who may speak English, Spanish, and their language so that they become teachers for the others. So that this idea of reaching the population is great, and we are glad that this.
Before I get to my question, I want to clear up some history. Now, was Juan Jose Arevalo, who wrote The Shark and the Sardines, you talked about a democratic period, and I don't know what happened before him, was he the immediate predecessor of Jacobo Arbenz, who was overthrown by the CIA with Colonel Rettinger, who spoke here, who was part of that, and then opposed later on, replaced by Castillo Armas. So that chronology is correct. And it's been
That chronology is correct, and I take advantage of your comment to mention that this year we are reaching the 60th anniversary of the most significant event in Guatemala in the 20th century, which was the October Revolution in 1944. That was the change of a dictator for a real democracy, a real democratic opening, which was, in a way, originated by the ideas of the New Deal by Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the United States. Right. And then we had precisely the first president of that democratic spring, as we call that period, was Juan José Arevalo, and the second president was Jacobo Arbenz. Unfortunately, at the end of the 10-year period, in 1954, the United States government, it was not just the CIA, it was the entire government of the United States, decided to stop that project, to stop that democratic spring. United Fruit Company was responsible, but also at the highest levels of the government here with Dwight Eisenhower and the Vice President and the person in charge of the State Department and so on, it was an action of the most powerful state in the world against Guatemala in 1954, in July 1954, and that was the end of our democratic dreams. After that, we had the nightmare of constant repression, which, as I mentioned before, took genocidal conditions when Rios Montt was in government. So that you are right about the period and also about the book that Juan José Arevalo wrote, which when he was referring to the shark as the United States and the sardines of the other little Latin American countries.
I want to thank Dr. Molina for being here. Let's all give him a warm round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.